Luke Hundley has been a busy human being. When Hurricane Laura was planning to hit the coast of Louisiana, Team Rubicon sent Lucas and a team of Team Rubicon sawyers and heavy equipment operators out before it hit landfall. Providing capability of sawyer operations and heavy equipment, this team went out into the unknown to provide the best service they possibly could, given the parameters and safety capability that they had. After 10 days out in the field, Lucas came home and has been trying to sort it all out, put it all together about what actually was accomplished in such a short amount of time. As we stood up the operation in support of Hurricane Laura's landfall, Lucas and his team was an integral part to making that all happen. Hearing stories about things out in the field, right as they're happening, is unique to Step Into the Gray, but it's one I thought was fun to look into. Hearing Luke's stories, the successes of his team, and the lessons learned are powerful moments in our culture. So a lot of cool shit has happened in the last couple of months, but in particular, this last few weeks with TR has been busy as hurricanes have decided to make their presence known in our operational tempo. Today, I have Luke Hundley with me, who Luke did some absolutely fantastic stuff in Louisiana really early on, and I wanted to have him in here and kind of share his experience in Louisiana with all the great work that we're doing down there for communities that really need our help. And so today I'm bringing in Luke Hundley. Luke, how you doing?
Doing great, man. How are you?
I'm good. It's really good to talk with you. It's been a little while since I've seen you. I think the last time I saw you was at your in-doc for the Clay Hunt Fellows Program, which congratulations on that. So Luke, you had a chance to go down to Louisiana, but I wanted to hear a little bit about you, kind of what's your background, why you're here in Team Rubicon, and then I definitely want to jump in full bore with your experience down in Louisiana.
Yeah, sounds good. So my name's Luke Hundley. I live in Skytook, Oklahoma, just a little north of Tulsa. Born here in Oklahoma, raised a bit in Arizona. Kind of had a rough upbringing, not a lot of direction getting out of high school. Signed up with the Oklahoma Army National Guard, 120th Engineer Battalion. Served 8 years with them, had one deployment to Iraq in 2004 in Fallujah, Ramadi. My son was born while I was in Iraq, so I came home not really knowing what to do, but knew I needed to get on the saddle, get a job, and get to work. So I went to nursing school, graduated nursing school in 2009, became an RN, started working in the emergency room, which I'm still currently doing. 2013 was, I joined up with Team Rubicon initially. I had, you know, after spending a little bit of time in healthcare, I realized that the service I was seeking in healthcare was more of a commodity than a service. And so I kind of wanted to explore the volunteer world of medical, and Team Rubicon checked all the boxes for me, what I was looking for. So I signed up, and ironically enough, 3 weeks later, the tornado hit in Moore, Oklahoma. So being an engineer in the Army, I kind of knew my way around heavy equipment, chainsaw, stuff like that. So I loaded up and self-deployed down there. Hadn't gotten my green dot, so to speak, at that time. I worked a few days, and as I was leaving, I ran into some guys with gray shirts on and asked them if they could get me hooked up. And sure enough, they did. So I spent a few more days, and, you know, kind of the rest is history. I didn't have a lot of time between there and Harvey to be involved with TR from just personal life things going on. Harvey hit, and, you know, I met Tom Walmsley down there. He really inspired me to step up as a veteran leader within the organization. And so I've dabbled a bit in local Tulsa City Administrator for a while. Jumped in the chainsaw program. I went through that full course. I'm an RCI2 now. I've had amazing opportunities to cut with some of the best and brightest in TR, the Dan Halls, Jay Kurtz, Juniors, Randy Carmichaels, those kind of people. I've loved every second of it. Got to a point in my life where I wanted a new challenge. I wanted something different. That led me to the Clay Hunt Fellowship Program. I'd met a lot of guys that had been through it. I was on the fence, you know, didn't feel like I was the right person for it. You know, finally I got to the point where I pulled the trigger, just graduated in July. It was a fantastic experience. Challenged me in ways I never expected. A lot of self-growth, great experience. So that pretty much brings us up to Louisiana.
Yeah. So let's talk Louisiana. You know, amongst all the things that have happened in 2020, you know, from the COVID-19 pandemic, us completely radically changing our mission set, providing food provision and medical care throughout the U.S., and then having to have all the protocols in place, important protocols that keep us all safe and keep us all, you know, being able to maintain that mission readiness on a day-by-day basis. But really, I mean, now all of a sudden it's hurricane season, which we knew was coming. It never goes away. And some years are bad. Some years are really bad. And this year, it's definitely been a challenge, especially with all the protocols in place for COVID-19. But you got the call. Give me some of that timeline that talks about what happened and kind of what was your timeline on all that?
Well, I mean, to tell the story all the way, I think you got to back up to Hurricane Harvey and me living here in Oklahoma, being in the South Central Territory. As volunteers, we recognize route clearance is a big need. So those conversations started around the campfire, and it was something that it kind of got taken from us, and National started building something on it. I heard a lot of rumors and this and that, but didn't really know where it was at. After finishing the fellowship in July, I was, you know, to be real honest, I was in a pretty big reflective stage of, you know, looking at Vince's theory of where I was at with my car. Was I going to park it? Was I going to take it on the block, or was I going to go on a big road trip, you know? And then, so that call came in just on a Tuesday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Got a text from Territory MOB asking if I was available to be at the NOC that night for 2 weeks. And I responded back, you know, geesh, that's a big ask. Took a screenshot of it and sent it to my wife. And my wife called me immediately and said, what can I do to help you make this happen? So, you know, that kind of
excellent support, right? Nice.
Absolutely. Just opened the gates wide open for me. So about 15 minutes of troubleshooting, I ended up calling my mother-in-law in Minneapolis and asking her if I could fly her in to hang out. I've got 4 kids in my house. My wife works full time. So that was, fire was put out, and I hopped in the truck at 4 a.m. the next morning and was at the NOC by 11. Met up with the team there. It was really hectic. Real hectic. You know, we didn't really get a chance to introduce ourselves. Nobody really knew what role it was. Next thing you know, we were in 3 different trucks headed for Louisiana. And that's kind of how we got there. It was unexpected. You know, I had an opportunity the night before, being somewhat SharePoint savvy. I jumped on there and found the doctrine that had been written by National. So I kind of had an idea of what I was going into, what the expectation was, but you know, all plans are good until they get tested, and then you move.
Right. And I mean, that's the thing is, you know, you're working off, you know, a little less sleep, a whole bunch of strangers, typical TR thing, which is that, I mean, that's the beauty of this organization is we are these very flexible humanitarians that want to go out there and provide great work within communities that are having a rough time. So you got up, you got in the truck, you moved out as a team. Where'd you head to?
Well, like I said, plans kind of fall apart sometimes when you get going. So we had a little mishap and had to go a wrong direction to pick up the correct CTL. Mm-hmm. Which put us behind target a little bit. We were supposed to, the plan was for us to get to Lafayette before the storm came in and hunker down. The Advon Recon team had left about an hour and a half before us. But we are our planning kind of that, you know, it was the first biggest and best test for our team right there. Cause it started raining on us good around south of Shreveport. And the rain really picked up high. You know, it was wild. There was a lot of laughter. Yeah. Adrenaline was flowing for everybody. We were on the radios immediately. I was in the lead truck. So, you know, within my truck, we made a plan of how far are we going to push this? You know, we all knowing that if we got stopped and if we were diverted from the plan, it was really going to delay us the next day getting in like we wanted to. So we kind of came up with a plan of, you know, how big things are going to be rolling on the road before we changed direction, pushed through. It all worked fine. We got into the got a little hunting cabin out on a bayou. We had to drop our gear in Lafayette because where we were camping was risk of flooding and getting the equipment out. So dropped that in Lafayette and then went over to Bow Bridges, I believe it was called. Got it in there about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. Wind howled all night long. Didn't get a lot of rest. We were up by 6, chomping at the bit, ready to go. Yeah, and so that was first morning, Thursday morning. It rained until about 8 o'clock. We're kind of functioning in a CNG format, but not really.
Kind of a task force, maybe. Kind of a task force thing.
We were definitely a task force, but I was real unfamiliar with the leadership structure of running that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it just caused some confusion, but we pushed through it. It was great, but they gave us the go ahead. So we went and grabbed our equipment in Lafayette and then pushed into Lake Charles. Coming in, there was, you know, it's just like Armageddon, man. There was power poles down everywhere, trees down everywhere. There was zero assistance. We didn't see any emergency vehicles. Only people we passed once we got into the real highly affected area was there's two highway patrolmen cutting a tree on the opposite side of the highway from us going in. That was it, all the way to downtown Lake Charles. As soon as we got into Lake Charles, I mean, our destination going in was to go meet up with David Burke. He had the proverbial golden ticket for us to get access, is what I thought we were going to pick up. Kind of got directed into, it was hard getting around, you know, poles down. So it took us a bit, about an hour or so to get to him. Should have taken about 10, 15 minutes. Once we met up with him, he'd already gotten a first tasking from the EOC there in Lake Charles. And we went to Highway 27, which was the only access into Cameron Parish on the Louisiana side. We pushed in real far. I mean, we kind of ran over the tops of some trees trying to really get in and get a good survey of what we were looking at. I got to a point where it was just all power poles and we couldn't go any further. So we just turned around and cut our way back out, cut about a half mile of road, maybe 12, 15 trees. They were blocking the road. I mean, other vehicles weren't going to go over the top of the trees to do that. So, that was, you know, the testing ground right there of how the team was going to function once we got into running HE and working saws and, you know, the stars aligned. It was a magical, magical group of people we had that were all, you know, willing to deal with ambiguity and unclear direction and dangerous environment. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's also a testament to, you know, when stuff like this happens, I mean, you got to obviously have some leadership. You have to have some direction. And all of us know that some of our own skills adapt well into that. Other times it doesn't. And I think adaptability is certainly a mindset that an awful lot of our people come into this with. It's challenging. It's stressful. You guys were working on very little sleep. And, you know, when we walk into these situations and the devastation like that, and there's no other word for it, is so bad. And there's targets of opportunity everywhere for us to deal with. Maintaining focus, maintaining cohesion, keeping the mission always on the forefront of our mind and being safe it's a challenging thing. And I think in that task force model that you guys jumped in there with, which I have some familiarity with, it's not easy either, because it's like you're still trying to figure out who's doing what, who's capable. And I like that our best efforts always come to pass when we just kind of let it go, be flexible, and move. Good on you. How many days were you in Cameron Parish? I mean, that was pretty much where you were the whole time. Is that correct?
No, we kind of bounced around, really. I mean, we started there in Cameron Parish, but we worked in Sulphur a bit. I'm not sure the pronunciation, but I believe it's Carlos. We worked there quite a bit. We worked within Lake Charles quite a bit, mostly west of Lake Charles.
Okay.
Yeah, west, south, and west.
And did you feel like you had, I mean, obviously with Burke out there helping you out, getting you into the EOC and getting linked up with those guys so that they knew you were out there, but also what you were capable of. How many days do you really feel? I mean, you were down there, what, 10 days?
Yeah, 10 days total.
And during those 10 days, kind of give me a picture of what your day in and day out looked like.
Well, I mean, honestly, it was GSD every day. It really was.
You can say that. I mean, this is not a, you got shit done.
We really did, man. I mean, like I said, we got 2.5-3 hours of sleep that first night, pushed into Lake Charles. We had saws running in the CTL off the trailer by 10 o'clock in the morning. And then we cut and worked on that till that stretch of highway there till about 5 p.m. Then we pushed into Lake Charles to find new billeting for us. We were directed to go back to Lafayette, but it was kind of a, you know, being on the ground, we knew what that meant. So we wanted to try to find a real good place and then call, you know, the head shed folks and let them know what we found and get approval that way. And we did right there in Lake Charles. We are just outside. We're in Moss Bluff. We found a Baptist church that let us set up our cots underneath some awnings they had over the sidewalks. Next morning, you know, we didn't sleep at all that night because there's special forces mosquitoes down there that'll bite you through your clothes. It was insanely hot.
There's millions and millions of squadrons of mosquitoes down there.
They're big, man. Big, bad dudes. Yeah. I think I hit a couple of them and they flipped me the bird.
Yeah,
they're serious. Yeah. So yeah, bad sleep all night. Super hot. Humidity is about 186%, I think. Literally had to push pools of sweat off my cot in the middle of the night. Nice. Next morning, same thing though. We're up at 6. We had a quick little brief amongst the team that we were with. You know, I should tell you the team was, they had it broke down. There were 7 folks on the team. We had 4 Sawyers, 2 Saw 1s, 2 Lead Sawyers, HEO 3, HEO 2, Task Force Leader. Last minute, they added a medic on for us. So that was the primary team. And there was, Mark Rogers works with David Burke, kind of worked a lot on writing up the doctrine for this. He embedded with us.
Nice.
Mostly as an observer. You know, I'd like to speak to, you know, you've been around Team Rubicon long enough. A lot of folks listening to the podcast have. When I saw the national people came on, I got a little worried, but I'll tell you, it was super refreshing to me to work with those guys down in the trenches and see them really pushing boundaries and, building a capability. That was another super powerful thing for me. Changed my perception of what's happening up above us a tremendous amount. So,
That's a neat statement to have because it is. You know, here you are, you're out in the field, you're doing your job, and oftentimes there is this, well, those guys in this place or those people who are setting this policy or this doctrine. And I have to tell you, you know, after, you know, I think we've both been around similar times in the organization that, you know, there is not one person that I've met in this organization that wants to do a bad job, that wants to make a mess of things, that wants to not provide good quality support, care, whatever it is. We all come at it from different angles, and some of those angles may not work for everybody. But I do believe that the policy makers and the folks who are developing our protocols honestly are doing the absolute best job that they can given the information that they have. And it's good to hear when that whole thing works, where you know the people who are making those decisions are out there in the field with you, and it's happening. Like it's actually getting work done. So, you know, and a lot of times when we're on a bigger operation, a bigger response, we have work orders. And in this case, you guys weren't working off work orders at all. You literally were making shit up as you went along. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that kind of evolved over the course of 10 days. We're the route clearance team was scheduled to demob on the 1st. And Alex Roth and I, he was the HE lead, we decided to extend because there was a bit of a handoff. But, you know, when it started, like I said, is Burke got that tasking from the EOC. I think the next day we were mostly getting taskings from any different entity within the EOC. They were kind of prioritizing for us. So we were doing those. Around day 3, I think it was, we started doing all of our taskings were coming from the utilities company. It seemed to me, being a, you know, guy behind a saw, it seemed like to me they were identifying grids of the electric system that they knew had to come up first.
Right.
At that time, we still weren't seeing there was not a lot of us. I mean, there was no volunteer organizations around, weren't seeing the electric companies yet. They hadn't gotten their contracted crews out. So, I mean, we were it. We were the only people we saw actually doing work. A lot of folks hadn't come back from evacuation. It was pretty wild. So in between taskings for them around the fourth day or so, anytime we had downtime, we pulled up the CDC website and identified those high SVI neighborhoods and, you know, the people that are going to need the help the most. And we started trying to clear like main thoroughfares into neighborhoods, you know, those big cross streets that cut them up. We just tried to get those opened up at least. And anytime we'd get tasked, we might leave a job and come back to it if we had to, and move from there. Somewhere around the time we were about to demob, I believe probably the last work day before we were supposed to demob, EMS, police, and fire had started tasking us. Apparently they'd had a couple of houses burned to the ground that they weren't able to get to because of access issues. Right. So that's kind of how we closed out. And that's why Alex and I decided to extend is, you know, we've been deeply engaged in this route clearance pilot. We felt like we had good information to hand off to the next team. So we wanted to make sure that there was a solid handoff to help make the thing a success as it went through. That didn't really pan out. Once the contracted companies from the electric company started coming in, they really started getting roads open fast. So we kind of last day, we had one last work day with just three of us left on the team. So it was fantastic way to close it too. I don't want to fast forward into that story yet, but it was good.
Well, and I think that's where we're going to go. I mean, talk with me about that. I mean, you know, that's the thing that I believe makes A, the podcast powerful, and B, our own cultural telling of stories. They reinforce our cultural principles. And so, yeah, let's go.
Well,
run.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So, you know, I spit through those taskings from the authorities pretty easily because, you know, to be honest with you, being a gray shirt, that felt a little weird, you know, working for the government. And to be honest with you, the neighborhoods they were sending us for the electric grid were not the neighborhoods we primarily work in Team Rubicon. And we as a team recognized that. And we were having that conversation in our trucks. That's partly why we started kind of looking those SVI places and things like that. So, you know, we had one opportunity to work with a homeowner. They did a little promo shoot about talking about that need that's down there with the lady that we worked on her house, a tarp her roof, tried to fix her truck. Alex and I repaired her generator, replaced some gaskets in it because it was leaking fuel, some things kind of outside of what TR does. But it was just the one opportunity that we had. So that last day we were working, like I said, it was just myself, Alex, and Mark Rogers left. And we all kind of, we were smoked, man. We'd been sleeping outside and hadn't showered and hadn't eaten right all, you know, for 10 days at that point. And we said, you know, tomorrow let's just try to keep our equipment in the truck, but touch as many people, individuals as we can. Let them see this gray shirt. That's just dragging sticks out of driveways. That was our whole plan for the day. Around 10 o'clock in the morning, I think it was from one of the recon teams or one of the site survey teams, we heard about a guy that needed some help. So we just kind of headed that direction. Ended up coming up on the guy. He was walking down the road. We stopped and asked him if he, you know, needed any cold water or anything like that. And he said he was coming back from town, tried to panhandle some money to feed his kids. And so our ears perked up. He told us that since the storm, his road had been completely blocked, lived on a dead end street, couldn't get his vehicle out. He had a 2-month-old, a 4-year-old, and a 2-year-old at home. He told us that he'd gone a couple of days with no food to feed them. They were in pretty dire situation. So, you know, it was just the three of us. He's trained as a Sawyer and HE. I'm HE and Sawyer. So, you know, Mark worked as our kind of safety spotter out there for us, blocking that into the road, making sure our work area was clear. And Alex and I got after it and, you know, made short work of about 4 big mature trees and some other obstacles that were in the road and got the road cleared up for them. It was an absolutely phenomenal way for us as the three of us, you know, that had worked in kind of leadership roles on the team to be able to close that week out. Cause we'd all had that conversation about how it was different and we weren't helping individuals. And it was harder to see a little bit harder to see the benefit, you know, the bigger picture of getting the electrical grid open. That's a different side aperture you're looking through than when you're helping a family of four, you know? So it was a really phenomenal way to close it out. All the neighbors that lived back behind that obstruction, every single one of them came out there and talked to us and thanked us. They'd all been trapped back there and had no idea when they were going to be able to get their vehicles out, get to work, do anything else. So, I mean, it was really, really powerful. It was exactly what we needed to close that op out.
And I think, you know, what you're saying there, that's a testament to, you know, what we're doing. Sometimes we're sending, you know, teams in for very specific things, gathering specific bits of information. And I think that this is where trust in the process comes into play. And you're right. When you're going out on a large disaster site, seeing a lot of things and a lot of people impacted, you want to get in there and get after it. You want to get busy, help individuals, help out families. And sometimes it is doing the prep work. Those teams that are out there now are benefiting from the way that you did things, the relationships that you created, the rapport, the reputation that you built. And that's the beauty of what we're trying to do. And I love the task force model. I've worked under it a couple times, and it's a little intimidating because you don't have the comfort of having a full incident command staff backing you up, but you do have a lot of bright minds backing you up and keeping you moving. And I do believe that it's good also to get something that's meaningful for yourself and for your team. So good on you. Luke, why do you keep doing this? Why?
Oh, man, you know, I knew you were going to ask that one. That question, the answer to that evolves. Every single experience I have with Team Rubicon, it evolves. My first time walking through the parking lot and more is I felt like I had a real strong desire to go help people. And I had something to give. Somewhere along the lines of teaching Sawyer classes and being a mentor in the field, that give turned away from like externally what we help with Team Rubicon, and internally I see the benefits that I have as a mentor. You know, and that goes both ways too. Every single experience I have, there's somebody I can learn from. This experience with the route clearance team culminated every single bit of that. You know, I felt amazing to help the folks to get in there real fast, to kind of, I don't want to say it, but kind of throw caution to the wind. As we were told in our brief before we left, to go out there and do the unsafe things as safely as possible, to help the greatest amount of people. That feels phenomenal. On our team, he wouldn't mind me saying it, Mitch Horn out of Texas, he was put in our task force leader. He was kind of uncomfortable in that role, felt a bit intimidated with some of the experience that was on the team. But, you know, I learned a tremendous amount of him through mentoring. You know, by day three, I was able to just tell him, you got it, dude, take the reins. This is your show. And away he went. You know, that the confidence that gives me, the fullness that puts in my heart to know that I'm living by the principles and values that I kind of hold high. There's no other way to be tested like that. You know, I work in an emergency room. It doesn't do what I do for free for Team Rubicon. It doesn't give me the same benefit. So I know that was really kind of all over the place, not a real direct answer, but it's always evolves.
As it should. And it's been mentioned on this podcast before that we don't ever sit back. You cannot stop evolving. You can't, whether it's, your own emotional intelligence, your capability, your perception of what your team should look like or shouldn't look like, those perceptions, those things have to evolve. And if they don't, we get static, we get slow, we get big, we aren't going to provide that same kind of impact. And you're right. And then again, going back to this whole task force thing and how they work, these are lean, mean groups of gray shirts. You know, they really are. And you're usually finding people that are multi-hatting things and trying to keep everybody, you know, on the ground, safe, effective. I think that your experience down there, to me, should typify how we do a lot of stuff. And that is, we're going into a disaster environment. It's not going to be comfortable. The chow's going to not be great in most cases. the sleeping arrangements are less than ideal. And yet every day you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and you're chomping at the bit to get going, to make an impact. And I appreciate that every single time I go out and do that, but I also appreciate hearing these stories of people wanting, needing to do that same thing. How many MREs do you eat on this one?
I probably had like 2 or 3. I brought some bougie dehydrated camping stuff that my wife bought a few years ago. It's pretty good. I was eating a pad thai out there.
You know, wow, look at you. Kind of good stuff, yeah. You're elevating your game.
You know, I'd like to touch back just a moment on what you were saying there about the Absolutely. Team and it being a lean, mean machine. Is I think that was one of the biggest take-homes from everybody that was on our team and any observers to what we were doing is this is just your basic gray shirt qualifications. You know, being a Sawyer 2 doesn't make you necessarily qualified to jump in on something in that setting because we got very lucky in that we had a great team of people that had, you know, great soft skills and great flexibility, and they were adaptable and they were safety minded, and they were able to control their own, like, type A, want to jump out there and get some shit done as quickly as possible. We really melded well together. And I think that kind of goes, you know, the fellowship, as you know, being a fellow yourself, it really lets you turn in and kind of look at who you are and what you are and what drives you. And I think that, you know, that's we all kind of have a little bit of that Clay Hunt in us, that, you know, that same drive that he had and that same push to want to get out there and do the most he could to help anybody else. And that's where the value from all this comes. That's what feeds us. That's what pays the bills for us, you know, so to speak.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Because it is a risk that we take, you know, it's a risk that we take every time we go out the door to do anything in life. But in particular, you know, when you're going out as a gray shirt, you have no idea what your team is made up of. No idea. 9 times out of 10, you have no idea what their capability is as an individual. And I'll be honest with you. Every single time I've gone out with Team Rubicon in a training situation, a service project, an operation, there has been another skill that I feel was either forced on me, which happens. I mean, we are sometimes forced to evolve, but also you meet these people with these skill sets and it's like, I want a bit of that. I want to adopt part of that into what I can do, what I can deliver, how I can continue to serve. And I think really that humanitarian spirit, when you distill it down, I mean, I think I've told this story a couple of times, but I really truly believe that we all identify with whatever it is within the organization, a Sawyer, you know, a heavy equipment operator, you know, an assist trainer, whatever that skill set is. I'm part of the command and general staff, whatever you want to identify yourself as. But ultimately, when you distill it down, we're all a gray shirt. And if you go one step deeper, we're humanitarians. And we want to help people. That's all we want to do. We want to help people. We're just big fans of humanity. And seeing other humans suffering, having a hard time, is something that we want to jump in and help. May not be able to fix everything, but we can get the ball rolling in some cases. And in other times you do. You camp on a particular situation and you fix it, and you fix it all.
Yeah.
And in the process, somehow we get fixed and we do get paid. We get paid in that capital that is not traded anywhere. It's something you got to go out and earn.
Right. You know, one of the things I like to always keep in mind when I go on ops is, you know, you run into some folks sometimes and, you know, the most chewed up, unhelpful, you know, guy that a lot of people might give a hard time or something out there on an op, you always got to keep in mind that he's still better than 80% of the people you walk past in your local Walmart supercenter. You know what I mean? It's the cream of the crop of our society that says, I'm going to put this t-shirt on and go sleep on a cot in the heat and get bit up by mosquitoes and eat shitty food. And I like to always try to keep that in mind when I size people up in Team Rubicon is, you know, they're better than most other people that we interact with on a daily basis.
Well, and that earnestness is there too. You know, they genuinely, you know, they want to, from their perspective, they want to provide the very best care, the very best capability, the very best of whatever it is that they're bringing to the table. And I think that's a good way to size somebody up. It's like, well, I know this person's coming from a good place.
Yep.
Let's just, yes. So that's where you start. And I do like that. It makes that awkward thing when you're first meeting a new team get a lot easier. It's like, well, they're all here to do a kick-ass great job. So from there, how do we make this machine, this team really function in a positive way? So you've been back for how long? A week, maybe?
A week today. I got back last Friday.
So you got back into normal life. How's that feel? How'd that work first couple days?
It was great, man. It's been really, really great. It honestly has. Been on enough of these things that I've learned to channel my thoughts to where I don't end up with the post-deployment blues, as we say.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had a lot of time to really reflect on this experience. And it sounds kind of cheesy, but I feel like I've already kind of poked some of those new skills into being at home with, you know, my wife and four kids, and got back to work in the ER the last couple of days. Nice. Just interactions with patients and coworkers, and everybody else seems brighter. It's been a really great week, man. I know that sounds a little ridiculous, but yeah, it was a big moment in my life for sure. That week out there in Louisiana.
Good for you. And you know, as you're seeing teams, and as you're seeing, you know, full operation stand up based upon some of the work that you guys started, have you been in touch with anybody who's kind of out there right now? What have they had to say about, you know, what's going on?
I have. You know, when route clearance was just closing up, we ended up kind of intermingling with Operation Crying Eagle as they were setting up and getting going. It was rocky, like the beginning of any operation, especially something on this size and this scale, and then considering the COVID environment that we're trying to work in. They had a rough patch there, so I've kept in touch with a few people that are still there, and things are really starting to roll. It sounds like they're getting strike teams out. Everybody's getting to work. Situation is still austere. There's no electric, no water. It's uncomfortable, but from what I understand, there's pretty high number of gray shirts on the ground getting shit done right now, that's going to grow in the coming weeks.
As it should. I mean, that's a tough area, and when it's affected that completely with something as powerful as Hurricane Laura, you definitely want to provide the best work that we can. So I do want to ask this, because I think this is something that, you know, we'll look back on this year, 2020, is, I'm going to say, it's been a fucked up year. You know, it's challenged us societally on a number of different levels. It's challenged our organization. You know, we have a lot of protocols in place for COVID-19 to reduce the spread, reduce the impact of it on our organization. Talk to me a little bit about your experience out in the field utilizing these protocols. How'd that go? How do you feel about that?
It was a little different initially with us when we were just kind of on the task force level. We stayed three to a truck. We kept masks on in the truck. We were doing daily temps. For us, it really didn't impact us until we got into the larger group of people. You know, I mean, I think it's kind of hard to, in group of seven, the risk is a lot lower, right? It's CDC right. Even says 10 or smaller groups is okay. So it's tough. It's a real hard thing for anybody to get too used to. And, you know, no matter what your opinion is on masks or COVID-19, I don't care what your sway is. I mean, we're there to do no harm. Absolutely. Right. So
absolutely.
Yeah, there's no reason to take the risk of it. You put the mask on. Nobody's going to jump your ass if you forget to. But you might get reminded. I mean, and by might, I mean, absolutely, somebody's going to remind you. I don't know how many times I went to the shower and came back and forgot my mask, and so I'm pulling my T-shirt up over my nose. It's different, but you just got to be flexible. And
how is it cutting? That's something that I think a lot of folks are kind of like, well, how are you supposed to cut with a mask on? How'd that go? Talk to me.
We didn't cut with the mask on, to be honest with you. I mean, you got six, your spotter's 6 feet away from you. You got your social distance. You got, it's hotter than hell, man. It is hotter than hell. I wouldn't truly expect anybody to be doing real strenuous activity with a mask on. I think it gets into a safety scenario. I think that's different when you're talking mucking out houses, because everybody's going to have an N95 on anyway. It's a contaminated area, but you know, cutting, it was too hot. But when we got in the trucks, we were pulling our masks up, rolling the windows down, even though it was hotter than hell, air conditioner on blast and windows down. Yeah, I mean, all the cots are separated, kept 6 foot apart. Same meal times. Everything's a little, everybody's separated. One person serving the meals. It's just a lot of little tiny inconveniences that are, you know, they're for the greater good. So it shouldn't be any sweat off anybody's back.
And now that you're home for a week, you've checked in with your team. How's everybody doing?
Man, I'm telling you, it was a crazy experience. We've all been chatting ever since last week. You know, I got one team member is applying for CHFP. Got another couple of others that it reinvigorated them. You know, the Kool-Aid was mixed super strong for us down there. So every one of us kind of got a, it was nice. It was new perspective. It was really good to, you know, as a gray shirt that's real act, you know, if you're active, you kind of feel like you're doing the work, you're training people, you're mentoring people, you're doing all that. And it was really good for us to see, you know, to blend with the national staff and see that bigger picture of they're doing the same shit. It's just, it goes back to that military, you know, kind of motto, know the job above you and the job below you. We all had an opportunity to kind of really look inside of what that job above us is and the jobs below us. It was a great experience for everybody through and through. Everybody's doing well.
You know, I think when it's all said and done, you know, we're trying to do the best we can out in the field to impact communities. And I think that, you know, there's no small measure of effort that goes unnoticed. And when we go out there and put ourselves out there, make ourselves, you know, do this work that isn't always fun, that is definitely dirty, but does provide such an impact to a community, being able to route clear the way that you guys did, is impacting people beyond whose street you're actually on. And I think that you and the rest of your team, which I'm going to give you a moment here to shout out here in just a minute to each one of your team members, but you know, you guys did good work and you took some risks and you did so smartly and safely. And that's a big deal. That's kind of what this organization is about. And I appreciate that from you and from the rest of the team that you affiliated with down there. So yeah, I'd love to have a moment shout out to all these folks, because it is nice to recognize people that you care about and who have done good work with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you gave me this opportunity. Real proud of the fact, being from South Central, that just about the whole team was from the South Central Territory. That speaks volumes to what we've done within mobilization and training and everything within the territory. So I'll start off. Yeah, with task force leader was Mitch Horn. Alex Roth out of LA was our HEO3. Ray Bowen out of Texas was a HEO2 for us. We had Paul Wood and Brian Yang, both out of Texas. They were our SAW1s. Mark Winters was a SAW2 below me. And then myself, I was the SAW team lead as an RCI2. They added on last minute a guy by the name of Jeff Mott. Jeff served as a Special Forces medic and now works as a orthopedic PA. He's out, I believe, Fort Worth area as well. It was actually Jeff's first ever TR experience.
Awesome.
And I think it was a phenomenal one for him. he learned a lot. He got to see a lot. He got to see some real high speed TR shit. And then, you know, I can't not mention Mark Rogers. He wouldn't be on the 204 if there was one for us, but Mark Rogers was an absolute integral part of our team as well. He's a gray shirt through and through. If he wouldn't have told me he worked for national staff, I'd have never guessed it. He jumped out there, road guarded for us. You know, we're working in traffic, so we had guards out. He was doing that. He was helping us with safety plans. He was coordinating our next moves on taskings. Absolute big help to the team. And then, you know, national staff was in and out. We had David Burke and Zach Brooks Miller in and out of there. Dennis Clancy showed up for a bit. Nick Mirzlak was out there. And that's primarily who we were working with. It was truly a wonderful experience. You know, like we all say, it's a good thing about doing TR stuff is, you know, you're going to be working with good people. I couldn't identify a weakest link on this team. There wasn't one. I mean, this was just absolutely stellar individuals with, you know, gravel chewing, dragon slaying people that I'd ride around in a truck with. Hell, you know, it was excellent.
Good for you. Well, you know, Luke, I you know that, you know, you're still kind of getting back in the swing of things, and this week's been chaotic, and I know you are also chomping at the bit to get back out there, but I appreciate you. I appreciate the effort you put into this. Thanks for coming in and kind of giving us a quick little infill as to what's going on in this larger picture as we respond this year, especially given the impact of COVID-19 and all that that has done to our organization. I also believe that all of this has provided such a great opportunity for us to really sit back and understand how important our soft skill sets are to make these teams work. Additionally, just being able to have the humility to go out in the field and do whatever it takes to get the work done so that communities can begin that process of coming back into their own. So, Luke, thank you very much for giving me some time. And I hope that the rest of your fall is outstanding, and look forward to hearing some more stories of you out in the field later.
Yeah, sounds great, Mike. I appreciate the opportunity. It was a pleasure.
Having the attitude that getting shit done is an important way of doing business is something that has not fallen short on Luke and his team. Providing service to communities impacted by disaster are something that the larger group of gray shirts have a handle on as well. Doing good humanitarian work for communities affected by disaster is our bread and butter. Doing so in a COVID-19 response is also a challenge as well. Maintaining our safety protocols and doing the best practices to keep ourselves and our communities safe is a good plan, one that's executed very well, as Luke has shared with us today. Thanks for listening.